What's up, all you burner stoners and potheads, and especially all you gardeners out there? This is Mr. Weed Man and Big Girl with the Grow Hour. Big Girl, my brother, how the hell are you?
What's going on, man? I'm doing good. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. You want to know why?
Why?
Because we got Seattle Chronic back on for his Burping in the Bag episode. Captain Steuben, how the hell are you, my brother?
I am doing wonderful, my friend.
It's great to have you back on again for Burping in the Bag. And before we get started, Big Earl and I are going to smoke. And Captain Steuben, we talked before we started the show, and you said you're on a TB break. Tell some folks what you're doing right now to kind of kick it in a little bit, though, even though you're not smoking.
All right. So myself, I am taking a tolerance break, which is just something I do around this time of year every year. But I basically make hash rods and edibles just to kind of cope with daily pain, things that I usually deal with smoking. It also helps with having to lower my tolerance, not having to dab or take as many bong hits. And it's for overall health. The older you get, we kind of got to start taking care of ourselves a little better. So.
Yeah,
I love that. I'm an old man, and I'm actually under the weather right now, but I still fucking showed up to this show because I love it and I wanted to talk with you. But that is a good point right there. Taking care of yourself, even when you're younger, middle age, and older, taking care of your body is so important. And to lay back on, Earl and I were on the practice yesterday, and he was ripping from his packs yesterday. Cut down a little bit of smoking every once in a while is not so bad for your lungs. We all smoke a lot. Yeah. You know, trying new strains, smoking on shows, hanging out with your friends, whatever. Some people smoke every day from the time they wake up, from the time they go to bed. It's okay to find a different way to consume your cannabis to get your medicine. Would you agree, both of you guys, right there?
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. And it's important to reevaluate your relationship with the plant. Like, your relationships are constantly changing, and your relationship with the plant constantly changes. And to be able to step back and be like, all right, how is this, you know, it's a huge thing, I think. I don't think we talk about very much, but it can really help people just kind of normalizing about that.
Yeah, what's your normal
Oh, go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead, Captain. What's your normal TB break?
Well, I mean, it all depends. So, like, usually I'll do like a 30-day at least. It's also to kind of break the smoking cycle, just because I kind of have, as an addict, like coming from a background where I was hooked on opiates in my 20s. I just have to avoid things and routines where I get into behaviors of, you know, doing too much smoke and then, like you said, with pheno hunting and having to smoke hundreds of flavors or, like, you know, test the effects, there's times where I really I get like immune to it. Like, I mean, I can, you know, take 3-4 dabs and I'm like where most people are for, you know, just taking a bong hit. And so it's like time to, like you said, reevaluate your relationship with it and just to, I don't know. It's like the coughing to me is what gets to me. It's like I can smoke fine, but it's like when I start hacking so hard that it like affects, I start crying or like I can barely catch my breath, then I know it's time to kind of step back and get my lungs back underneath me.
There you go. That's great. Good to hear. Good to hear. See everybody out there in the world? You can still use cannabis in a different way. You don't always have to smoke it. And Captain Steuben, who's a professional over there, can vouch for that. You know, so let's explain. Oh, Earl, what are you smoking right now? I'm smoking Orange Soul. Delicious, nice. My friend.
Yeah.
And I only took a couple of hits because I'm a little chest right now, but I took a couple of hits. I smoked that out with I gave some joints of that out to some people on Saturday too. And people were saying it was phenomenal. So nice. The taste, the smell still smells like an orange blossom. This other round you did. So what are you smoking on?
Train wreck. I found a little train wreck plant. I only popped 3 fem seeds, but they were all very stable in terms of expression, at least. And I found a little one that I forgot about hiding in the back of the tent.
Are you going to be able to do this show? Because the last time you and I smoked train wreck together, we were wrecked.
Yeah, that's true. I think so. I hope so. Yeah, that's true.
We were. He bought some train wreck to the house like a couple months ago. Earl, myself, and Mrs. Weedman were out back, and he rolled a monster, and we smoked that whole monster though too. That was the other point. We didn't even like leave. I think I'd left like a little nub for after you left, and I was confused.
Well, it was a good smoke.
I hadn't been confused like that in a long time on some fucking weed. That was some heady, phenomenal tasting, phenomenal rush to the brain of like, what was I doing again? Where was I at?
Yeah.
What part of life am I in right now? That was some good shit, Earl. That was some good fucking weed.
A bigger hunt of it. That was only, I only popped three seeds. It was CSI's S1s. And I only popped three seeds, but they're all really good. They all were just like that. They're all very, like, you could taste the train wreck in all of them. It was nice to see it not all over the place.
Yeah.
It was good. So before we get started, Captain Steuben, glad to have you back. This is your burping in the bag episode. This is the episode where we have you come back on, and this is your show. Big Earl and I just get baked and listen and learn and have some fun, ask you some questions, but this is your show. So this is burping in the bag. So what's been going on since we had you on the show last, which was like a month ago? I'm so glad for you to come back on this quickly. It's awesome. So what's been going on since we talked last?
I've just been kind of getting a plan together for breeding work that I'm diving into. Pulse Grow sent me their new hub setup. And so I'm kind of dialing in an experiment. Just running some analytical data for them, just trying to basically see on, how two beds compare side by side with the same clones and kind of doing analytical data at the end of it. And so I have an experiment with Pulse going on, and then just planning out breeding because I took 6 months off from, just to spend with my family and kind of take a break from, stressing about what I was going to do in the garden. And so I really just wanted to develop a new relationship, or I guess the relationship I had with cannabis in the plant, to where it didn't seem like a chore, like I'm having to run through things. And it felt overweight on me. And so just taking a break, coming back to it, looking at plants, and then reevaluating my selection. So I've been planning on what I'm going to do for my next breeding project.
Resetting and refreshing is so clutch. When you do what you do, both of you do for a living, it is. I tell this to all the people all the time. I'm a home grower. I don't grow a ton, but I give myself a few weeks off after I do a grow, just for my home grow, just to like, okay, because it takes a lot of work. You got to watch those babies a lot.
Yep.
So it's great that to hear that you refresh, you reset, you found a balance in life, spend some time with your family. It's great because you put a lot into your craft. It's a lot of work, a lot of time, a lot of energy, especially when you're trying to grow and breed and find seeds that are going to be your next winners, or find males that are going to be your next winners, and find females that are going to get you what you need. I mean, it's all up here. A lot of note taking, a lot of analytics and data to get you where you want to be at. So it's great to hear that you refresh, you reset. Now you're back to work and doing some different things, yeah. Some data analytics and stuff. Sweet. On the last show, we talked about different cannabinoids, and thank you for that because it was awesome. What are some you have that you enjoyed growing the most?
Oh, man. So there's quite a few different cannabinoids. I mean, Varen's in particular have been what I've been like really ramping up on, trying to get my CBG stock back up just because I had to get rid of a lot of plants. Other than that, it's mixed ratios. Like my personal favorite are kind of the type twos, one to ones, things that have equal measures of different cannabinoids, and just finding like one to ones that, wash well or translate, because a lot of CBD dominant stuff tends to be more sappy when you wash it. And so it comes out a sticky sap texture, and just trying to find other CBG dominant plants that wash well, and just so that we can have a multitude of cannabinoids and solventless extracts.
Sweet. I love that. I love that about you, because when we talked last time, it made me very excited that you took some of the other cannabinoids. It's not all about THC. You're finding what other cannabinoids can do for people. It doesn't always have to be about THC.
Yeah.
And I love it. And it makes me happy. Now here's the question. How hard is it to like get specific type of cannabinoids you grow? Like, how do you grow? Can you grow specifically for like CBG? Can you grow, because it's the mother, it's where all cannabinoids come from, but can you grow specifically for, can you grow the THC out of it? Because we've grown it so where it was just only THC now that you had to reintroduce a lot of these new cannabinoids. How hard is it to do that?
So it's, I mean, it's not super, I mean, I say it's not super difficult, but again, you just have to know what your intended outcome is. And then with CBG plants, it's weird because there's like two pathways. And so basically when you have, say, one parent stock that goes to the next generation, well, some of them are going to be CBD dominant, and then some of the outliers are going to be CBG. And so you basically have to select from those and then rebreed the ones that are going the correct pathway, so that you can find CBD dominance. And then from there, you need to find the lowest outliers with a lower THC level and then kind of breed through selective breeding to get that outcome. But it's definitely something that, I mean, I've done it with CBD. That was kind of what I did through the, you know, 2013 to like 18, I probably created, you know, 20-ish CBD dominant cultivars, and kind of moved on to CBG, and I had to get rid of a lot of stuff, start over. And then I started working Varins. And so it's, I think those are kind of the biggest cannabinoids that I'm focused on at the moment. I mean, there is some that have promise with CBC as well, and then CBN dominant stuff. But a lot of times, that's not really a huge interest because, I mean, you can just let material degrade and get the same effect. And so, like, it's not as a desirable outcome as, like, some of the other, you know, minor cannabinoids that basically the only way to get them is to do post-processing.
Ooh, what's that?
So
I don't know what post-processing is.
Conversion. So basically you can take CBD and you can convert it to Delta 8. You can convert it to Delta 9, to THCPO. Like there's just THCO. There's different ways of basically being able to manipulate it and post-process the material into a specific cannabinoid. And that's
so that's what, they're doing synthetically that way though to get there, because those are very, like, Delta 8 is grown in the cannabis plant, but it's so minute. Could you be able to grow that to where it's just strictly a Delta 8?
I have a few plants. So Mud Honey was one of them that actually came out with higher levels of Delta 8, and it wasn't, I mean, it was in, like, you know, I think 1% range, which is still incredible for a plant because they're usually in the 0.1, like, I mean, very, very minor. And so it's possible. It's just analytical labs aren't necessarily trustworthy in terms of cannabinoids. Like, you have to find a lab that will test specifically and they have it on file and that the levels are correct. And so I've had, like, with Varins specifically, I've had 4 or 5 labs and I'll run the same exact material through them and I'll have different results through every single one of them. Some of them will test not even like showing so one may show 1 to 3% because they don't do any variants. They might've seen 1 or 2 plants. They have that in their base file or whatever. And then another lab who's dealt with it for, say, you know, I've sent them tons of different stuff. They've dealt with other breeders or other plants that are high in it. They tend to provide a better service because they'll give me more of a factual, and I think it's just to do with science as well, and how they take the sample, calculating. But I feel like a lot of people who have handled it know how to do the process, to where these other labs, they just kind of say, well, I guess this is what it is, even though it's like I've had this plant tested 3 or 4 times. It comes constantly 6%, and now I'm getting 1% out of it now. Tell me how that happened, like, and they can't answer the question. So I'll just send it off to the other labs who can, or give me the correct, you know, numbers back that I kind of have worked with them in the past. So it's crazy, honestly. I mean, it's very costly and time consuming.
I bet. Now, yeah. Are you, there's still cannabinoids that we haven't discovered yet, right?
I mean, they're constantly discovering like terpenes, flavonoids, cannabinoids, and what is it, like THCO, acetate, all these other
HHC.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you think you'll ever discover one that hasn't been found yet?
I mean, that's the crazy part is like, how do we know without the analytical research to prove it? So maybe I already have, and it's like, it's just gone unnoticed. And that's what's worked for these people, that they think it's, you know, a Varin, or they think it's this THC and this combination of terpenes and this, and that's why. And it's like, no, actually there's a cannabinoid in there that specifically is triggering something in your body to a reaction that we have no idea about at this point. So
right. I mean,
it's very well possible that we're kind of dealing with stuff that we have no idea, especially with like land races and a lot of the hemp lines that I kind of grew out indoors. You get different variances wherever they're grown. You know, there's not a specific, so it's like if I grow one specific plant in the Northwest and I take that same plant, a land race that did relatively well in the Northwest, well, it sucks in the Midwest. Like it doesn't perform as well. And so that's the other thing that I'm having to deal with. It's just kind of hunting through new stock and getting things situated here. Like a lot of stuff that I had prior, or, you know, I had to keep up in Seattle, and then finding things that are acclimated towards the Oklahoma environment.
Very drier in Oklahoma, of course, versus Seattle, which is very moist and humidity high and rains 90% of the year.
And it's, the temperature swings here are like the most insane thing I've ever seen. Like it'll go from like, you know, 3 degrees to like 90. I mean, in a day, like you wake up and it's freezing and ice everywhere. And then by like 4 or 5 o'clock, it's like some days it'll be 70, some days it'll be 50. It's manic.
Yeah, that's hard.
It's crazy. Well, that's so awesome. I know Earl's got some more to talk about, but I get excited to hear about, you know, different terpenes, cannabinoids, flavonoids, esters, and all that stuff that you all are discovering. And like you said, you might have discovered a cannabinoid that has been missed because you've been doing it for so long, to look for different cannabinoids, minor cannabinoids too. So it's exciting to maybe one day you'll be able to see something on a test that you discovered, which would be dope.
Yeah,
that would be cool, especially with all the different ones. And like you said, every different situation. So you're like, oh, this grows this high CBG only under LED or whatever, you know. But yeah, you talked about 1-to-1s, and then you talked about 1%. What are, so 1-to-1s are usually right now, at least, just CBD and THC, right? And then
I mean that's what a type 2 is considered, is equal ratios of, you know, 50-50. But I mean, I have type 2s of like multiple cannabinoids. And so there's like THC to CBG, there's CBD to CBG, there's THCV to CBDV. Trying to think what other ones that we have. The other one that I've really been going for is the 1-to-1-to-1.
The trifecta.
So I've been working on this, I've been talking about it for a long time, but it's like I can seem to get them down to 2-to-1-to-1, but it's like I still haven't nailed. I get these weird swing ratios, and then it ends up being like 2-to-1-to-3 or 2-to-1. You know, it's never consistently come out, and maybe I'm just missing the outlier, or I'm not popping enough seeds to get where I'm looking. But it's like I'm still not. You know, I don't have a piece of paper showing here's exactly three of the same levels. So I do have some that are pretty darn close, but it's, again, I'm a perfectionist in terms of that. And so it's like, that's something I've really been looking forward, is trying to find something that is, you know, equal parts done through genetic breeding without CRISPR or any other, you know, genetic editing software or anything like that. I mean, just through old fashioned breeding techniques.
I like to hear about the one. Hold on, Earl. Hold on 1 second. I like to hear about the 1-to-1-to-1. That makes me excited. The trifecta, the triple threat. What are the three cannabinoids though that you were trying to get the 1-to-1-to-1? Sorry, Earl.
So, no, originally it was THC, CBD to CBD. Just because I felt like those initially worked so well for me. Then I started to find out CBD, the more I use it, I needed less of it, and so I would be okay with like a 2 or a 3 to 2 to 1 or something like that, where it's it's more about the levels being correct for what I need it, rather than just being having like bragging rights, or this is, you know, I created this. I think for me, it's more about what works for people. And so I think that's kind of why it's eluded me for so long, is just because I'm so moving over to this project or this. And so I feel like taking this step back and really like looking at my goals and saying, okay, well, that's something I've had, you know, in the past 5 years, I've been looking for this many plants and I still haven't been successful. So that's on part of my agenda, was kind of dialing that in a little bit more.
Yeah. That'd be awesome. That'd be, what are those percents looking like? Like at your 1-to-1-to-1, is it like 5-5-5 or like 8-8-8? Yeah,
that's kind of 6-6-6, 7-7-7, you know, something like that is what I was aiming for. But I mean, in reality, 4-4-4 is probably what you're looking for. Like when you first do, and that's what people, so everyone's so enamored by, you know, cannabinoids being 30 or high percentage in this. And it's like, the baselines at which these miners, because they're miners, and so when you convert them, they're going to be in minor ratios. And so it's like when I started to see it be in the 2-to-4 range, and then all of a sudden you pick something that's dominant, that swings out and it's in the 4-to-8 range, then you kind of have to go back, rebreed the other one to be higher. And so it's, again, it's just like, between having to choose plants and then do the analytical stuff at the end of it, pay for testing, you know, what, 100, 300, 500 samples at $50 a pop. I mean, it costs a lot of money to do that shit. And that's what people don't realize. It's like, it's not easy in terms of not having anybody financing my grow. Like it's all just done through me for my own research. I'm not being funded by somebody who has millions of dollars. It's like, I have to work for my money to do this for people. So it's a little bit different in terms of that.
So support the small business owners and growers instead of supporting big corp. So these folks here can do the research that actually you really need.
Yeah, it is what you need too, you know. And so, do you look at taking, like, so you're trying to bring in more CBD? Do you look at taking another cannabinoid out? Because like when we talk about 30%, right? That's cool to hit 30% THC, but what I see more there than anything is that there's only 70% left for the plant material, the terpenes, anything else in that plant that you want. 30% of it's THC. So you have 70% to really round that flower out real nice. So do you attack it more just like, and maybe this is even like a stupid question. Do you attack it more like, hey, I need to take this out to make room for this other one to come in? Or is it just like, this got the highest percent, so I'm taking this bad boy in there?
Yeah, that's so, and that's with breeding in general. Like you'll see that a lot of people find a plant that's strong, and that's, so it promotes analytical data, which in turn people think stronger is better. And so numbers matter to, you know, that's a big thing to where if you're breeding for potency, like potency and resin, then that's what you're looking for, is whatever the sophrostiest and highest testing. And it's pretty, in all honesty, it's probably the most common practice in terms of breeding, what most breeders do without, you know, actually knowing that they're doing it, but they're just seeking out those two attributes and then maybe a various terpene or two. So, I mean, it's just I would say an entry to breeding, doing something like it's just finding one or two characteristics and then wrapping your head around like how the offspring relate to those, and then choosing the genotypes based on what is best suited out of those two and what best represents those as well. And so, I mean, it's really kind of the same with hash breeding. So it's like, hash breeding is not pretty. They don't breed pretty plants. And it's kind of a funny thing, because for years we're trying to get nodal structure and things where we have, you know, anything from big donkey dick buds to, you know, golf balls, but consistent weight is the weight's what pays the bills. So it's like we're trying to build weight off these plants, and then all of a sudden hash comes along and it's more about internodal spacing and having these airier plants that have, you know, ease of access to the trichomes. And it just kind of throws things on its head, because it's like, you're breeding really ugly plants that do not work in terms of flower production. And so I like to look at it multifaceted and say, like, okay, this plant performs in, you know, all three categories. She's a keeper. It's not just she's a hash or let's keep her. She's a hash or let's keep her. And I get it, for hash labs, that's your bread and butter. But like, there's just so much to the plant and so much that people can identify and breed for. And I think it represents our personalities in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Damn, that's interesting as hell.
You know, a lot of people aren't growing. Like, yes, there are people out there just growing for hash or just growing for flower production. But like, most people growing for themselves probably want to get a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
Like you, nothing goes to, you know, you get your keef and you do what you make your edibles and your balms with that. And you get your trim and you make your edibles or whatever the fuck you want to make with that. And your fly, whatever, however you do it yourself, you know, so. Getting plants that can do everything, you know, a little bit of everything, yeah, to me. Yeah.
No waste, man. That's my big thing, is having no waste. Like, whether it comes down to using all the trim, the stalks, the roots, like, you just have to make sure that you have a closed loop and that you're not, you know, just throwing a bunch of shit in the trash and contributing more to waste problems.
Yeah, that's one of the best parts about, like, living soil. It's like, you don't throw out soil, you get your one pot for a year or two or however, probably longer.
Oh yeah, I run beds for years, man. Like, I just build them up and they just get better with age. Like, I think I'm on my third year now of the beds I have in my house. And man, I'll tell you what, this round, they are kicking. Like, I do a lot of pheno hunting in kind of some smaller pots just to kind of see how they express or what they need to be fed and how they react. And so I'll run them next to the beds, which I have dialed in. And it's just crazy to see the difference, like, I mean, versus living soil. And then the other ones I tend to do Synganics because, you know, they're 2.5 gallon pots. There's no way in hell you're doing a living soil in like in a 2.5 gallon. So it's like, I still play with, synthetic nutrients, but I'm very much, in terms of breeding, everything is done probiotic. I mean, it's all probiotic seeds. Everything is regenerative. Everything in my practice to do with breeding is, you know, tries to be in a living soil environment.
Sweet. Yeah. I love it.
And they found that there's bacteria and stuff in the seeds. So like,
yep,
if you're not
coating biointelligent seeds that basically have a coating that reads. So I mean, you literally, it's like nitrous. So it's like you throw them in the soil, they read the code, boom, unlocked, let's go. It's very quick to identify, to where sometimes on these synthetic grows, you have trouble even popping them. When they do, you get a small percentage that actually have vigor to them, which you're usually looking for in genetics right out the gate. It's probably the thing I look for in seeds first off, like, whatever takes off the first is kind of what I have my eye on. I look at the outliers from there, and there's things I'll find characteristics that I'll breed with, but it's usually whatever is the most vigorous, the strongest, that has, you know, whatever other traits that I'm looking for. But vigor is definitely the most in youngins, like, and then how they respond, like, immediately if they get any sort of wilting, rotting, or, you know, the percentage of those as well.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Do you follow like Jeff Lohenfels and all that kind of stuff? I know he's big.
I do. I've met him before, and nice. Back in Washington, I met him on Vashon Island through Shaping Fire. There was a book signing there, and so I got to sit and talk with him and Dr. Ethan Russo as well. I've got to sit and chat with him just because we have a few issues with autism, CBD, things like that. My son has autism, and so again, breeding for things like that were very important to me back when medicine wasn't around. And so I was the source of my medicine for my family. And so it was very important to me to get things right. And then hearing things from people who were doing it on his level or through his education and what he was doing, it was just, it was really cool to be able to, you know, hear from somebody that I'm, you know, doing the right thing, you know, like somebody who's a medical professional, like, you know, It was one of those things where you kind of feel like you're on the right track when, you know, sometimes you feel like, why am I doing this? Or, you know, all of a sudden someone comes up like that and says, oh, you know, I really enjoy your work. You're like, oh, cool. Okay. Keep doing this.
Yeah. A little validation. Oh yeah. Yeah. That's cool.
So, we see so much CBD and THC out there. What do you think the next big one's going to be? That, I mean, I've seen them edibles, you know, CBG and edibles now, THCV. That was supposed to be the next big one a couple of years ago, but I don't think it really like got to where people were talking about as much. But, you know, CBN is the big one right now. The last 3 or 4 years, CBN has been rock. Which one do you think the next new wave is going to be?
Well, so, I mean, it's really weird because it seems like anytime they're finding, it's just, it never seems like it's going to be like CBD was. Like, it was such a big discovery and all these, you know, people hopped on the train, and it's like, it was such an open movement because of the like hemp, whatever movement behind it. I just don't know if it's ever going to be, unless they find something that is like, you know, it's like, what is it, THCO, or like you said, the other ones that are supposed to be 100 times or 10 times stronger than, you know, Delta 9 or any of the THCA, or I really don't know. I mean, I think I banked on Varen's personally. Like, that was kind of my thought, just because of the medical benefits that haven't, you know, they're still being discovered. They're being run through by corporations. It seems like it's a big draw, and it's kind of more of a hush thing. That's what I thought. Varen's were going to be it, but it seems like people just don't really care about it. Like, it's really weird. It seems like everyone's enamored with purple weed still, so nobody's really.
I can tell you in my experience, the full plant, no matter what that, excuse me, no matter what that really is always way more beneficial with like balms and stuff. Mm-hmm. Using like a CBD isolate or a THC isolate or anything in there compared to just a simple keef. The keef is what, that's the Beagle Bomb I dropped off for you guys.
Amazing. Amazing. Like,
but just, there's something about getting that full plant, yeah, that full, like, or more of a full representation and everything doing its stuff together. And when you get those one-to-ones, you know, it's going to be super badass, because that's when people are going to realize, like, THC, like, it's going to be such a different feeling. I feel like it's going to be so different.
You know? Yeah, I completely agree. And I think that it's just getting people to try it. I mean, because every, like I said, everyone's so fixated on numbers and what, you know, what's the highest this or what's the highest that. And it's like, people have no idea. Like, I've had a friend who I gave a sample of some mud honey, and it was like, I think 14.28 THC, but it had every cannabinoid in the 2 to 3 range. I mean, it had probably 24, 25 total cannabinoids. We smoked a joint and went to like a gaming place, Dave and Buster's, and man, he was so lit. He was like, "What did you lick this shit with?" I was like, "That's full spectrum, man. Like, that's all that is." And he was blown away by it. Still to this day, he talks to me about that.
Yeah. It's like your body's interpretation of it. Everybody feels a little different.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have anything? Would you have like a plant that you're particularly geeked on coming up, or a strain particularly excited on coming up that's doing some fun shit?
I have a lot of them. That's why it's so, like, I've been hunting the past 6 months, so I've just been going through seed stock like crazy, and I've hunted through, I can't even tell you, I've gone through a lot of people's gear, my own stuff from 2017 up to 2023, so I've gone through a lot of stuff, and I think some of this, I mean, I have a list of certain things that I'm kind of interested in, any specific cannabinoids, I mean, so let's see, right now, a lot of the Melvins crosses that I did, so I reversed Melvins and then released that, I think, at the beginning of the year, and I've hunted through those. The LA Pure Kush times Melvins came out really phenomenal. There's two plants that were, like, I'm still going on my second run with them, and so kind of isolating things down and choosing the winner out of those. And then the Boz, which is Bicket OG times Melvins. That one's been probably one of my favorites, just because it's yielder. It has nasty foul terps with a little bit of sweetness, but it's a good plant, man. It works medicinally for my wife and I, but it also just puts you down.
Ooh, yeah. Sounds like my kind of strain.
I have another one that smells like durian too, jackfruit. It's pawpaw. It's papaya. So it's a papaya cross. I think it was crossed with apricoma, and it smells like straight up. I don't know if you guys know what jackfruit or durian is, but it's like, man, it's kind of like socks, foul smelling socks, cheesy fruit. Like it's funky. It's really good.
Yeah, nice. It's man, I love terps like that where it's like you just like kind of smells like this, it kind of smells like that, but no matter how you put it, it kind of smells disgusting.
Yeah, no, it's good. Like every person says it's really. There's another one that was Papa G, and I brought jars of that. One of my friends going away parties, and like everybody that smelled it was like, "What the fuck is this? Like this is." There's no pleasantness to this. This is just rank. It smelled like rubber almost. It's like a rubber, nasty, like just old school. And they're older cultivars that were bred into it. And it's something that I'm reversing right now, actually. It's called Papa G. And so it's one of the, yeah, you guys will, you'll hear about it, I'm sure, in the next year. But it's something that, out of all the terps I've been kind of looking around in terms of plants, it's something that kind of checks all the boxes. It produces, it washes, it's a yielder, it looks pretty, it smells nasty. It's like, yeah, I'm very stoked on it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Is there a characteristic you look for in your plants really early? Is there something, vigor? You know, vigor, I think, vigor, would be the
thing. That's kind of, I mean, other than that, it's mostly like how it responds to stress. Like a lot of times when I'm, so what I'll do is I'll hit things in their stride, but I'll always take cuttings off, and then I take the cuttings and I put them in a solo cup, and then I'll kind of root stress them to see how they respond. And so once I get an idea of what stress is easy, what doesn't, what takes a while, it helps out like newer growers. And so by selecting things that aren't as finicky through these, you know, root bound issues that a lot of people tend to run into, overwatering, simple things where they're just, it's like things people overlook. And so I tend to look at like, okay, this plant's responded really well to this, these types of stresses. I think I'm going to move it forward in the breeding program. And so it's not just like, I'm like looking at a plant and like, oh, that one looks sexy, I'm going to breed with it. It's like, I have to put it through, like, if I get, you know, fungus gnats or whatever, like which plant does the best with them. Okay, that's tolerant to that, so it's not necessarily, or aphids, any plant, like putting it outside, trying to get them infected, get them sick, see how their tolerance is to diseases, and it's a process.
Yeah for sure. It's something that like nobody does, you know. It's such a pain in the ass like to go and try to get aphids or
I just have to go to any nursery, really. You just walk through a nursery, yeah. Go home, go to your garden, you're good, man.
Yeah, for sure. You're exactly right. It's all
one. Go visit a local grow, and yeah, that's the easy way.
When did you get your clones? Okay, that's when you got your problem.
Yeah.
Every single time.
Yeah, if you've never had russets, I recommend ordering clones. Like, if you just order random clones, you can deal with all kinds of pests.
And then just fucking burn the house down.
Yeah.
I got russets twice in a row, and it was like a 6-month ordeal. I'm never going to fucking lose those little bastards again, though. You know, I learned a lot.
Sulfur, man. Yeah. Sulfur.
Yeah, sulfur. I like sulfur.
It's the only thing.
And I like dioxin. Those fuckers, though, man. If they, and just to know when to admit defeat, because if they're in there, if you're not knowing what to look for and they're like really populated in there,
yeah, you're done. No, they'll reproduce.
Getting rid of them, it's not. Yeah, exactly. Like getting rid of them isn't really a thing. Like you're just fucked.
Yeah, there's always, and that's what people don't realize. They're going to be there. It's like the pest pressure, basically, you're having to push it to a level where it's not affecting the plant's, you know, sap count. And so it's like, I've learned that, like, you have to learn what kind of, or like kills the pest, and then reintroducing beneficials as well is really important. I'm constantly doing that. Like, I'll do a spray, especially when I notice my sachets are kind of losing, if I don't have banker plants or things like that, and I'm usually relying on. But if I have an issue where, you know, you don't have those and you have to introduce sachets, wait till they're kind of dead, spray over everything, order new sachets, and then like nematodes as well. But it's just making sure that you have a constant, you know, revolution of beneficials.
Yeah. That's one of the best parts about outside, in my opinion. You can get like a bunch of flowers and everything's beautiful, and but it's also acting as like this pest barrier kind of, and attracting some of those bugs you love and stuff. I don't know. But indoors is a little trickier, but you know.
I run banker plants indoors too, man. I'm very.
In that soil, in a living soil, I guess it'd almost be. Do you run a cover crop over that too to keep like your moisture down in your soils and stuff?
I used to, but it's not so much with the indoor stuff. Like on larger plots and stuff where, you know, you need to fixate nitrogen or certain elements, like then I find it beneficial. But for indoor, I figure like just doing some soil testing, adding the nutrients that are required, and then just banging it out, like not having to, just because when I did that, the chop and drop, having to, like sometimes some plants would develop deficiencies or other plants required more calcium, or, and so knowing kind of what's been drained from your soil and then having to reintroduce it. I mean, there's a way of doing it with cover crops as well, if you know exactly what you're doing. And it's a lot more guesswork, in my opinion. You have to do a lot of evaluation of what the nutrient density of those are, what you're dropping, how the soil decomposes and basically provides the nutrition to the plant's ability. And so it's a lot more head work, I think. And so I just like sending a soil sample off, having a piece of paper that says you need to add, you know, eggsill and a certain amount of this, or, and then you're good to go.
Yeah. That's how they did it on our farm, which was cool. It was, we sent out soil samples and they sent back what the soil was. And then they sent back what like average soil was.
Yeah.
And then we could kind of go off of that, like, okay, well, we want a little bit more potassium than the average soil, or a little bit more calcium than the average soil, or whatever. And we were, and it was like, to raise this 1%, add this many pounds of this per acre. It made it really cool and easy for us, at least, wherever.
No, it is really. I mean, I recommend it for anybody, is to use like Logan Labs or anybody who does soil analysis. It's part of the game. I mean, you have to, otherwise you're just guessworking it.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Do you have a region of the world that you like? I don't even have an answer to this question for myself personally, but is there somewhere where you're like, man, I really like the weed that comes out of this area, or I really like this old school strain. Anything that this thing's crossed with is my shit.
Oh man, that's a tough one. I mean, it's so weird because again, the whole epigenetics of things, like I was talking, how it may affect it in one region, it may grow well here. I mean, primarily anything from like the Hindu region, like Balochistan or like any of those areas tend to have kind of like Hindu Valley. Anything around there, it seems like Nepal, any of those regions. It's more of the Kush stuff, I think, the early flowering, thicker, chunkier stuff. But I do enjoy Africans as well. Like, I love racy sativas. I like Farins. I mean, that's where they tend to come from, equatorials. And so it seems like South Africans are really rich in those.
Yeah.
Yeah, there isn't a specific one, but I think those are probably the two regions. I've been growing a lot of Thais stuff too. I got a bunch of Thai stuff, so I've been sorting through that. But Landrace crew sent me a bunch of stuff from like Tura Valley and Orissa. There's a ton of stuff I'm kind of getting into right now. And so hopefully I'll know here in the next, you know, 6 months whether or not anything's workable or, you know, indoors. Or if I have to move things outside.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I love that land race type. It's not practical to be like, hey, I'm doing a big giant hunt. Not for me, at least. But like, it's so fun even to hunt through like five or six seeds and see if there's something like different.
Yeah, they're wild looking, little... man. That's it. If you haven't grown one, grow a 24-week plant and tell me how you do. I've had some sativas that, like, I've run two cycles and it's still sitting in the back. Like,
damn, dude. I ran a Death Star that I was told had to run 16 weeks once, and I think I bitched about it probably like 5 or 6 times on the show already. That's how hurtful it still is to me. going. Like, I got my next plants coming through, and I'm like, God damn it, these fucking plants. And I mean, they were good, you know, but I was told that the best Death Star was at 16 weeks, so I wanted to run it 16 weeks. But, you know, what are you going to do? we talked about it a little bit, but I feel like you've seen it better than anybody. What are the big changes you've seen with hash becoming such a dominant role in this, in breeding? Have you seen, like, I mean what I'd assume would be some increased instability, because that's, you know, you're not, yeah, you don't want anything to herm, but when you're going just for hash, a couple seeds doesn't kill you too much usually. Smaller, shittier looking plants that hash out and get you, like, you know, high ass percentage on their wash. Is there something I'm missing there?
So the thing is like, hash used to be a very profitable thing, especially hash raws. And, like, you know, when it was selling at $60 a gram or $50 a gram, it was like you could monocrop a room and make more, you know, or the same that you would, I would say more, honestly, if you calculate, I'm not doing math right now in my head, but, I mean, back before, you know, I would say last year even, yeah, you could crush it if you ran a room for hash and just had something that, you know, washed at 4 or 5%, then you would, I mean, you would rake in some cash from that. But it seems like since kind of everybody's moved over to the hash rosin department, everyone's been growing a lot more for it. It's just, it's, the cost has gone down just like everything else. And so it's a lot of hash brands that were doing it big are kind of having to scale back. I've helped quite a few. I'm out in Washington and here in Oklahoma, and it seems like they're all kind of trying to do their own in-house thing now. Like, a lot of them are looking out for, you know, the next big thing and stuff, and then they're just realizing, like, it's all about finding what plants work for you, what dump, what can calculate a profit, and what sell. And so it's a lot of work, I mean, in all honesty. And I know a lot of people that are doing it. I've grown out crops for hash quite a bit. I actually made hash this morning. So I did a wash this morning, just to make some more gummies this week, because I like to make hash rosin gummies. They just tend to hit harder than conventional live resin or any of those. Like, you can take half the milligram dosage. Like, I would take, you know, 100, 200 milligrams of a live resin or something, and, like, I can eat a 33 milligram hash rosin gummy and be lit for 4 to 6 hours. Like, I mean, like, literally sometimes, like, I'm like, this is a little strong, and I'll eat like a 250 something else and be like, I don't feel a thing. So
yeah, I'll eat a 10 milligram hash rosin gummy, way different than eating a 30, 40 milligram distillate, you know. Yeah, whatever, you know, way different. The high is way different. I tell people all the time, distillate goes like this, straight up like a fucking roller coaster and straight down like one. Yeah. When you ride the wave of hash, it's just like, like a nice little train going up that mountaintop. And then it levels out, and you even keel for a few hours, and then you coast and you float on down. And there's none of that up and downiness. And that's why I love good hash. And, you know, hearing what you were talking about, that you have grown crops for just hash. The thing is, here's the thing. A lot of people are moving to hash because there's a little market for it right now. Concentrates in general are not a big market. Flower's still king, right? Concentrates are only 5 to 8% of the overall market right now. That's it. I mean, I know now people are making edibles with hash, and still not big because it's only a few states are doing, you know, a few states are making them, because it's still hard to get. Like, here in Illinois, it's hard to get good hash, period.
Yeah.
tart, and it's hard to get hash, period, but it's hard to get good hash here in Illinois. And I'm not making fun of anybody, but I've smoked hash from one side of the fucking state to the fucking overseas to I've smoked a lot. And this state, it's hard to get. And you have states, I've been to Oklahoma, where you walk into a shop and there's fucking just shit tons of it.
I mean, it's insane. Like, I mean, it is literally insane. Some of the, like, especially the last year after outdoor season, I will kid you not. Like, I just impressive, like the amount of hash that was on the shelves around here.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. I was there 2 years ago and I walked in. I'm like, they had like a whole wall, a whole like bookcase. I was like, that's all your hash? They're like, yeah. I'm like, holy shit, you have a lot of hash.
Yeah. It was probably a smaller shop too. Some of them have like, what, 400 or 500 flavors? Like, I mean, it's crazy.
It's a lot. Yeah. Michigan's pretty big too for hash. Yeah, I love going to Michigan again. Michigan,
for sure.
Yeah. But it's still such a small market. That's why prices are dropping. Here in Illinois, prices haven't dropped for hash. No. When you get good hash, you're still charging fucking big money for hash for a gram. But the average price now for hash is $25-$30. If you go to some states that produce a lot of it, that's, you know.
Try wholesaling just here through a legal, you know, licensed entity and like going, I mean, you're having people trying to offer you $12-$13 a gram. So it's crazy. I mean, it's a very competitive market.
For a small market share.
Yeah, small.
That's the problem. It's not there yet. And a lot of people jumped on a wagon that's still got one half of a wheel that needs to be fucking built. You know, flower still king. You know, you look at vape pens are growing. But this next biggest thing that's growing right is edibles and friggin' pre-rolls.
Pre-rolls, you know, are starting to grow. You ask any dispensary, they sell, and it's going to be pre-rolls.
Best money maker to make, because it's like a grab and go item. Like you go to the I talk to people about weed all the time in dispensaries. I'm like, what is the biggest place? 50% of all the sales come from in a grocery store. Dairy, nope. Produce, nope. Meat, nope. The fucking aisle when you're checking out, the gum side, the candy bar side, and the magazine side.
Yeah,
that's what a pre-roll is. Yep. A pre-roll is like your grab and go item. It's you're walking out of the dispensary and your bartender goes, I got pre-rolls for $4. Half gram or full gram? Full gram. I'll take one. You know, Illinois, they're still charging $13-$15 for a fucking full gram fucking joint. But it's crazy. But you could, yeah, thank you. It could be your grab and go item. You can make a killing on pre-rolls. Yep. It's up 12-13%. If Canada too, it's up. You know, infused pre-rolls are even more, even though I don't like really smoking infused pre-rolls that much. But I like just a good straight, you know, if someone gives me some good weed and a pre-roll, I'm excited, you know.
Yeah.
So that's that grab and go item that I just talk about all the time. But it's just like I said, small market for hash. It will come. I like going to people that make their own hash in their home. I've smoked some phenomenal fucking hash that people make. That is just like they know how to do it right, and it's so good. You know, so
but home people have that a lot of these it's not even there's great, you know, legal or white market or whatever you call it, hash and flower. But if somebody's growing it in their basement and they're smoking it themselves and they're pressing the hash and they're smoking that hash themselves, man, just some of the quality that they get. And when a bud only touches one hand and it's not knocked around a trimmer and then it's thrown into a fucking bag and then it's pressed on this super clean little fucking press and then it's hit, you know, fucking 20 minutes later, not even that, maybe it's whipped and thrown in the fridge or whatever the fuck the process is. It just hits so different, for me at least. But I have very little experience in dispensaries. You know, I have two dispensary visits, and they're both in Vegas, like actual dispensary as a customer visits.
Wow.
And man,
that's a weird place to do it, too. That's not a good example.
I spent like more money than I wanted, you know, and I was like, and my words were like, what's the best? What's your best? And you couldn't smell it. And like,
no, it's stupid. It's like Washington too. You can't smell anything. Yeah. It's the stupidest thing. That's how I choose. Like I got every jar that I go to smoke or whatever. It's like me and my wife will pop open jars and like, and she'll say, oh, that one. Yeah. That's what we're smoking. Like that smells good right now. So it's all based on olfactory senses. Like, smells the best.
Yeah.
You know Toucan Sam from Fruit Loops, don't you, Captain Steubing? Yeah. Follow your nose, it always knows.
Yeah. The last episode, you were talking about some THC work, weren't you? You're doing some THC work also, or you just did a THC
Or ton of THC stuff. Like, that's kind of, I've been really more, just because I've done mixed cannabinoids for so long, it's really refreshing to just get back to breeding, like, you know, flavors that I love, like stuff for, you know, just friends or myself that I really enjoy to smell. It's like about terps with me, like I said. And so it's like things that I find unique or weird that I'm not smelling in every fucking bag or jar that somebody's giving to me. Like, it's like the same, oh, it's gas. It's like, man, you guys have no idea what gas is. Like, this is not gas at all. And so I think for me, it's finding the most unique and just weird smelling shit I can find personally. And like, for me to say that, it's like, I'm looking for some weird stuff. Like, it's got to be kind of offensive, but pleasant at the same time.
Yeah. Like, you're almost like ashamed to like it. Like, it forces you to
like it. Yeah. Yeah, the baby shit stuff really where it smells like vomit or puke or like shit. Yeah, it's like, no, people are like, it smells disgusting. You're like, no, that's wonderful.
It sure does. Yeah, you're trying to describe to somebody without using the word like dumpster or piss or something. And you're like,
it's all of those, right? Actually. So it's all I can say.
Nice. That's cool, dude. I love cannabinoids too, but dude, the THC dominant. And you know what? I bet it's refreshing in that it's like a little bit more, like every time you try to go another layer, it adds so fucking much, like a whole nother set of like parameters. Like, oh, if I do this, it affects, I'm going for CBD and CBG, and if I do this, it affects this one negatively. But you know, just going back to THC and just fucking hitting it, I bet is nice.
A lot of the THC stuff I hand off to friends too who have licensed farms, and so they'll do pheno hunting. And generally, they'll kind of hit me back with stuff that they find. And I had a good friend here in Oklahoma, ATG Acres, Aaron the Grower. He ran, I probably gifted him, you know, I don't know, 10, 20 packs of seeds of different, you know, I think 50, 100 seeds a pack, something like that. Quite a few seeds. And so just to try and get him, he found beautiful phenos of exoneration, which is Gary Payton times OGKB times GMO root beer. And then the other one was Anthony Bourdank. And that one is like, I actually just got a message from a fellow cultivator here in Oklahoma that said he tried it. And he said, it's fantastic. He goes,
that name is fucking fantabulous, man. Fucking amazing.
It's like straight garlic too. It's foul. It's like really garlicky, heavy. It's a heavy Mercian Queen, like just puts you down. So
what's the GMO root beer and GMO, what's the difference? What's the difference there? So I hear people talk about GMO root beer.
It's funny. So like the original GMO, the skunk tech cut or whatever, it has kind of like a sweet creaminess to it on the back. So it's like, especially in the hash end, it washes really well. Anything with GMO, like that's why everyone breeds, just because the way it washes is phenomenal. The structure, it's a weird structure. You can bring down the flowering times in the GMO, which is what, 84 days. A lot of the crosses, you get that weird funkiness. And so it's like the root beer brings a sweet creaminess. The back cross too, that actually has more of a sarsaparilla funk to it.
Ooh.
And so it's not really, I wouldn't even say it's like a root beer on the first one. It's just more of like a sweet creaminess GMO. Like, it's just, it's not as foul garlic onion, not, you know, like, I like to say a true GMO is close to a ChemD. It just tastes more like it smells.
Yeah.
Like ChemD, so when you smoke it, it's like more chemical. It's very harsh. It's like you're expanding on your lungs. To where, I mean, I can smoke GMO all day and not really have an issue with that.
Yeah. GMO's loud as
fuck. Interesting. Too.
Like when I had that, I haven't flowered it for a while, but you walk by it in the garden and you have some fantastic plants next to it, but you smell the fucking GMO.
Yeah.
So is the root beer is a different pheno of the original GMO?
No, it's actually just called GMO root beer. I don't know what the cross is on it particularly, but I know that it's just Skunk Tech's cut. That's where I got it from and ran it and kind of passed it around.
Nice. Yeah. I've always heard people talk about the root beer, and for a while I was like, man, I'm sitting on a couple fire ass packs of seeds because I had a couple root beer packs from Hermetic and somebody had told me that was the cross there. And I was like, oh shit, that's the root beer and the GMO root beer. And then what didn't take very long for me to be like, oh, that's not true.
The original root beer was from Mean Gene. So I think, I don't know if it was a cross from his to the GMO that was done, but I just know that like root beer was like the elusive meme thing like a few years ago through Mean Gene. And so,
yeah. Yeah, it's funny. It's funny how the culture brings that shit out.
Yeah, that's for damn sure.
We talked a little about CBG RSO before the show. What is that? I know I know where to get it now. Thank you. But what is it? So I'm going to ask you a different question then. What is the feeling, the effects of an RSO, just a straight CBG? Like, what do you kind of effects do you get from it?
So I tend to like it more so with like the mixed cannabinoids, like lower, like we were talking, you know, so having a little bit of minors as well, just because it gives me, like an uplifting feeling. It's very anti-anxiety. Like my wife has anxiety really bad, and so it tended to help with her anxiety quite a bit. And so social anxiety, things like that, social situations, just being able to like get out and go. Like I have social anxiety occasionally, and it tends to help me with that as well. But I think it depends on each person. Honestly, I've had some people that it doesn't necessarily, for me, it's kind of a mood enhancer, brings me up, makes me want to go out and chat with people and kind of, you know, do things that I wouldn't normally do or talk to people. Like I'd catch myself chatting with people in the grocery line or, you know, talking a little bit more and just being a little bit more social. And I just don't feel so agitated, I think. So it kind of brings down any agitation or, you know, irritation that you might have towards pain or things of that nature.
Sweet. I love it. We're going to talk after the show. Big Girl, you got anything else to ask Captain Steuben before he sails off?
I'm glad my internet was working on this show, man. I was able to talk about it. But I appreciate you. It was awesome. I'm excited to see some of this stuff pop out.
Where can people find you?
Instagram, Seattle Chronic Seeds. You can hit me up. SeattleChronicSeeds.com is the website, or SeattleChronicSeeds@gmail.com for the email.
Sweet. Sweet. Love it. And we appreciate you coming back on for Burping the Bag. And thanks for all the knowledge. Go ahead, Earl.
Appreciate you.
I had one last question.
Yeah.
Have you ever tried like quadrupling or quintupling the CalMag ratios and trying to up your get some more like cannabinoid stuff going on?
So I kind of max out calcium on plants as it is. So the crazy thing is I make a water soluble calcium out of like eggshells, bone, things like that. It's a Korean farming. So as my pH down, I tend to use a water soluble calcium. And then I kind of have it dialed to where I already have the amounts preset in the soil as well. And so I'm kind of maxing them out as it is. But I've gone a little bit too far on that as well and messed plants up. And so I know to kind of where to keep the ratios, but I don't think it necessarily, I think for me, like the biggest effect in cannabinoids and things like that is just flowering, making sure that it hits its strides, like you don't ever have deficiencies. You're constantly, you know, every 2 weeks up potting. I mean, as long as that happens, it tends to be like, you know, the most robust plant. But I don't think there's a particular technique with applying, you know, more calcium or I know sulfur, adding sulfur tends to bring terpene count a little higher, but it's not like a crazy difference, but it does help.
Yeah. We have a joke. We do a joke at the end of every show where I talk about doing a ton of CalMag and you. I have something stupid to say, and you're like, let me throw out some genius for you here.
You threw out some fucking. I'm like, that's the best answer about fucking CalMag we've had in 46 fucking episodes. I'm looking at Earl, he's smiling. I'm like, yeah, okay, like, this is great. I learned a lot about CalMag and I never learned before. Everybody, Captain Super, thanks for coming on, Big Earl. I love you. Everybody, don't forget your CalMag. Peace. Check out our cannabis lifestyle brand online at 8decades.com. Our custom smokes and accessories are perfect for your coffee table, bedroom nightstand, or kitchen counter. They're designed for you to show them off. The canna community is also loving our hemp and cotton blend t-shirts, sweatshirts, scarves, and hats, finished off with our 8decades logo. We've got some awesome long-lasting goods that will be your favorite for years to come. 8decades, because a ninth decade of cannabis prohibition isn't acceptable.